Radio Cherry Bomb is produced by Heritage Radio Network, a nonprofit, member-supported radio station devoted to all things food. Help keep HRN alive by becoming a member today. Go to heritageradionetwork.org and click on the beating heart to donate. Were you into avocado toast before any of your friends? Do you know how to whip up some cashew cream? And do you make your own almond milk? If so, you're our kind of person, and you might be interested in the classes at the Natural Gourmet Institute for Health and Culinary Arts, located in the heart of Manhattan. Founded in 1977, NGI is the first culinary school dedicated to healthy cooking to be accredited nationally. Their professional chef's training program is offered full and part-time, and several of our favorite chefs are alumni, including Dirt Candy's Amanda Cohen, Alyssa Wagner of Dimes, and Chloe Coscarelli of By Chloe. Visit the NGI website to learn how you can transform your life and your career.
Today's episode is brought to you by Prince Street, Dean and DeLuca's monthly podcast dedicated to the delicious and infinite connections between people and food. Each new Prince Street podcast features special guests, field reports, and meals from around the world. Editor-in-Chief Howie Kahn hosts the show, featuring segments from correspondents such as Griffin Dunn, Jay McInerney, Eden Grinspan, and Sierra Tischgart. Download Prince Street on iTunes and online at livefromprincestreet.com. Prince Street, a fresh new podcast with a culinary heart.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb. I'm Carrie Diamond, co-founder of Cherry Bomb, the indie magazine about women and food. Radio Cherry Bomb is produced by Heritage Radio Network, a nonprofit, member-supported radio station devoted to all things food. Help keep HRN alive by becoming a member today. Go to heritageradionetwork.org and click on the beating heart to donate. All the cool kids are doing it. All summer long, we're sharing some of our favorite talks and panels from this year's Cherry Bomb Jubilee, our annual celebration of women doing amazing things in the world of food. It was held this past April in New York City. First, a shout out to this season's sponsors, the Natural Gourmet Institute for Health and Culinary Arts, where you can start your journey to becoming a natural food chef today. Baldor Specialty Foods, which curates and delivers the best and freshest food in the world to the restaurant and hospitality industries. And Prince Street, the fresh new podcast with a culinary heart from Dean and DeLuca. This happens to be a great moment for female chefs in New York. There have never been this many women leading great kitchens in the city. For the Jubilee panel entitled New York's Next Wave, we invited five rising stars to share their experiences. Melissa Clark, cookbook author and New York Times columnist, is the moderator. The panel will begin right after this message. Beginning as Balducci's fruit stand in Greenwich Village 70 years ago, Baldor Specialty Foods has been curating and delivering the highest quality foods in the world to the restaurant and hospitality industries. Chefs rely on Baldor for the freshest and most seasonal ingredients, along with new and exciting items that you just can't get elsewhere. Baldor's ordering process is designed with a chef's schedule and priorities in mind to get you what you need when you need it. Baldor is the trusted resource and partner for the region's top chefs. Learn what Baldor can do for your business today at baldorfood.com.
Hi, everyone. I'm Melissa Clark from the New York Times, and so many important themes have been brought up all day. We now have an opportunity to talk to women who are in the field. They're in the kitchen. All five of them run their own kitchens. All five of them have had incredible success, so much so that this is the next wave. These are the women who I'm going to be writing about. We're going to be seeing their names everywhere. We have been seeing their names. And I'm going to start by introducing everybody. I want everyone, Adrian, we'll start with you. And we're going to go straight down. Just introduce yourself. Tell us very briefly, tell us where you work now, and very briefly a little bit about your history. How did you get to the Red Rooster? And then we'll just go straight down the line, and then I'm going to fire away with questions. And just so you know, as much as we would love to hear from all of you, because I know you have amazing questions, we can't do that. We're not set up for it. So at the end, I'm going to leave 5 minutes, or maybe 10. I want all of you to ask questions of each other, because I know part of this experience is the community here. We're creating a community of women in the food industry, and we need to talk to each other, and we need to talk to each other in front of each other. So we're going to spend some time. So I'm just warning you, I didn't tell you I was going to do this. It's a surprise. They don't know this. So think about it. While everyone's speaking, you'll be listening to each other, and I know you'll have ideas of what you want to ask. Okay, Adrian, take it away.
I'm Adrian Cheatham. I am currently the executive chef at Red Rooster in Harlem. I've been cooking now for about 13, 14 years. Before Red Rooster, I was the exec sous at Le Bernardin, where I worked for 8 years. Worked in a few different states, only in the U.S., though, never had any chance to go abroad, but very happy to be here among so many wonderful, awesome people that I've never actually gotten to meet.
My name is Angela DiMiuga. I'm the executive chef at Mission Chinese Food in New York City. I've been working for the company now for about 4 years, and I met Danny Bowen through a mutual friend who's over there. But we recently got back from San Francisco because I've had the opportunity now to bring menu items to the San Francisco location as well. I opened up Mission Cantina with Danny and opened up Mission Chinese on Orchard Street. So we've done a lot for the company in New York City, but now I'm a part of the brand as well in California. So I'm super excited about that. And before that, I was working for Gene Adamson at Vinegar Hill House. And I've done most of my professional cooking in New York City, but really excited to be a part of this as well. So take it away.
Hi, my name is Alyssa Wagner. I'm the head chef and co-owner of Dimes in Chinatown. I founded Dimes along with my partner Sabrina DeSouza, who's in the back, about 3 years ago. We actually celebrated our one-year birthday yesterday at our new location, which we're super excited about. And we've recently expanded to include a market and a takeout location. I've been working in restaurants for about 20 years, both in the front and back of house, and most recently, before we opened Dimes, I was cooking at Five Leaves in Brooklyn. I'm super excited to be a part of the panel today, along with all these other amazing women, so I'll give it to you.
Hi, my name is Chloe Coscarelli. I'm the chef at By Chloe. I've been vegan for about 12 years now, and I got my start actually in cookbook writing. And we just opened our first location about 8 months ago now, so fresh in the restaurant.
Hi, I'm Emma. I'm the executive chef of Aquavit. I was born and raised in Sweden. I moved here 6 years ago, starting off as the pastry chef. 2 years ago, I took over and started as executive chef of the kitchen. So I'm a little bit of both. I can't really choose what's the best part of the kitchen is. So I'm trying to run both parts.
Being in charge, right? That's the best part of the kitchen. Maybe. Okay, well, so Mimi was just talking to us about the restaurant industry in the past, and I want to talk about what's happening right now. Is this a singular moment in the restaurant industry? Adrian, we'll start with you. I mean, I'm not always going to start with you, but we're going to start with you for this question because I know you've been in the business now for 13 years, right? So what do you see that's happening right now that's different from when you started 13 years ago?
I think the biggest change that I've seen recently is the overall acceptance and movement of more casual dining. I think that plays a big role because it makes the whole dining experience so much more inclusive. You can get great food without having to pay $500 or have to wear a jacket. You can have amazing food at all different levels of decor and environment, and that brings more people in all across the board. So food, ethnic food of different cultures may not have always been accepted as fine dining, but now that it's so much more inclusive and it's a little more casual, it brings everybody to the table, women included. So that could be a factor in that, but
Is this still on? Okay, there it goes. And now just also in terms of women in this movement, in this moment, do you feel like you're seeing more women who are leading kitchens, or do you find that in the 13 years it stayed pretty much the same?
They're more, I see more now than I did before. And I also, my mom worked in the industry, so I grew up in restaurants, and I've definitely seen more in the past 8-9 years than I remember seeing as a child.
Angela, you had told me on the phone that you are about to be a managing partner, by the way, congratulations, very exciting. What about you? Is this a singular moment? Are we in a special place right now in New York, in the rest? And I guess you should talk about, maybe New York is different from the rest of the country. You can answer it either way, either in New York or nationwide. Are we in a particular moment in the restaurant industry? And has that changed since you started?
Yeah, I mean, I think definitely some things that I've been seeing that's changed just in the shorter amount of time that I've been in the industry is I think that as a diner, also your time is really valuable. So I think that speaks to, the amount of time that people want to spend eating. That's also valuable. So, you know, you go somewhere like Noma and you can have 17 courses in about an hour and a half because people also maybe are going to that city to see Copenhagen, but maybe the main reason to be there is to dine at Noma specifically. So I think people have a lot more value in the diner's time to see, maybe eat at more places, and that can be the main event. But I think that restaurateurs are really responding to that as their responsibility to make sure they can not be there for 5 hours, but maybe be there an acceptable 1 hour.
How long are people usually at Mission Chinese? Like, what's the average?
Well, actually, at Mission Chinese 1 on Orchard Street, people kind of, they were able to eat there for 45 minutes, which I thought was really fascinating. A lot of it was because the restaurant itself was really cramped and uncomfortable, but now that...
I know, what a way to turn a check.
Yeah, but now that we have a more comfortable dining room, it's about 130 seats, people want to lounge and people want to spend time chatting, so we've responded to that by, people were sort of known to have really loud music. We turned the music down a little bit so people can have conversations. Mm-hmm. People are there for maybe 2 hours, and I think what we offer at Mission Chinese Food is really interesting because we want people to have a shorter dining experience. If you want to just come for fried rice and an entree, that's fine. But then you can also come in and have natural wines and really great cocktails and a prime rib to share amongst four people and have a special occasion. So I think being accessible and hitting it on all marks so that people can come with a variety of different backgrounds and a different clientele, I think that's super important for New York City especially.
And you think that that's part of exactly what's happening right now, is the ability to do that, the ability for the high-low, for the fast or the slow, to be able to really choose your own, like kind of like not have your restaurant experience dictated.
Yeah, I think that because that's the kind of dining I want to be a part of, like I think that's important that for our friends that come in, they can do that as well, and just be really respectful of people's time and what they want to do in their space, since we're lucky enough that they want to spend money and spend time with us.
You have been in the restaurant industry. You said that you were, when you were a teenager, you were working in restaurants. So was that in New York City?
I grew up in New Jersey.
Okay,
in New Jersey and then Westchester and Manhattan, yeah.
And when you were working in the restaurants, you were working your front of the house, right?
I did everything. When I was a teenager, I was a grill cook in a bagel shop. And, waited tables, I've bartended, I've done everything.
Right. So. And now you own your own business.
Yes.
And when you were opening your business, were you thinking, okay, I'm going to make this different from all the other places where I was working when I was, really coming of age? And
yeah. I think when we opened our own place, we were ready to put our sort of fingerprint on the New York restaurant world from what we had seen of it. My business partner also has worked in restaurants since she was a teenager. I think we wanted a place that we could really nurture our creativity and also be in an environment that was all our own. Mm-hmm. We had worked for many different restaurant owners and chefs, and I think one thing we wanted to create was an environment that was really positive and really friendly and really welcoming, and to create a kitchen environment that people really love to work in, because I know there's such a high turnover rate in kitchens in particular. So when we opened our place, we wanted it to be somewhere that people really wanted to work, wanted to stay, where we could foster other people's creativity.
And do you feel that, well, first of all, how big a crew do you have?
With all the business,
you have three businesses, right?
About 50 at this point. Yeah.
What's the male-female breakdown?
I would say it's about half at this point. It was funny when we first started, we were pretty much all girls.
And really?
We were really this like women strong business, but now it's kind of gone more equal.
Right. Yeah. So opposite of the CIA where it was more men and now, you know. I mean, do you think that women were seeking you out or like, okay, I want to work in your business because it's women run? Or you think it was just the sort of the way that the New York City food industry, you know, you knew someone who knew someone. Like why do you think it was all women when you started?
Sorry?
Why was it all women when you started? Was it because they were looking to go and work in a women-run business? Or?
Yeah, absolutely. We got a lot of... I studied at the Natural Gourmet Institute, and so we've worked pretty closely with them and looking for cooks, and I think a big draw for them was that it was a women-run business, and it was a place where they would feel really comfortable going into the kitchen environment. And then we also had a lot of friends that worked for us from the beginning. So that was, you know, it was a little bit of both.
Right. And Chloe, I know you also did Natural Gourmet, right?
Yeah, we were talking
about this on the phone. Why don't you talk a little bit about how Natural Gourmet, let's talk about the male-female ratio there. You were telling me it was, 15 women and 2 men or something?
My class, which was about 6 or 7 years ago, was about 16 girls and actually 1 man. But it's different every class. It changes. But I think because Natural Gourmet Institute, for those of you who don't know, it's a culinary school right located here in Chelsea. And it's focused on plant-based nutrition and health and food and wellness. So it's very, very targeted courses. You know, you take whole units on classes like cooking for cancer, cooking for bone health, really different from the traditional culinary school. But it's founded by a woman. There's actually one of the female instructors here in this room, and Chef Barb, she was like the number one strictest, most, you know, top of her game chef with the most experience there. Everyone was nervous when she was grading the finals because she was so good at what she did. And it just created this environment of female empowerment in the kitchen because we saw it because of our role model instructors.
And actually, I want to talk about mentors. Did you have a mentor there or a mentor who helped you open up your business?
I think, like Alyssa said, I did have a lot of great help from, you know, the chefs and women at Natural Gourmet Institute. I was set up with a wonderful team of female interns that helped me with recipe development. And our kitchen manager at By Chloe actually is a Natural Gourmet grad girl as well. So it's a great, great network.
So school was part of the mentorship.
Definitely.
Now, Emma, what about for you? Where were your mentors? Where did you find the people who kind of helped you on your path, helped you get from Sweden to New York, helped you get into Aquavit?
I think everything for me started with the first job I ever had. And I actually had two men in the kitchen. They were both chefs, executive chefs there. But the way they ran the kitchen was something I'd never seen before. It was more like a family. I stayed there for 5 years, and I was probably the one who left first.
Where was this? This was in Sweden?
This was back home in Sweden. I started there while I was still in school. So I was there for almost 1 year outside of class whenever I could. And then I started around 2000, and it was just a way of how they communicated and how they talked to you, and it was always such a good vibe. They would teach you, and they would ask you, and they would value your ideas. The way they put up changing menus or dishes, it was not, okay, here's the recipe, here's the menu, get it done. It was more conversation.
Or collaborative.
A collaborative effort. They wanted to draw ideas out of everyone that was there. So that was...
Something that you can do in your kitchen? How does your kitchen work? Is it similar or...?
I try and keep it as similar as I can. I always feel like a kitchen is more than just the chef.
Yeah.
I feel like everyone should be involved. Everyone should have ideas. Everyone should be able to come up with things. Every menu, every dish we change, if anyone wants to say anything, there's no such thing as a bad idea. Everything can be created, or everyone should be part of it. It's just not one person in a kitchen. You have a whole team.
Do you find that this is different from other... I mean, I guess you don't have a lot of New York kitchen experience, but is this different from other kitchens and other places? I mean, I guess I want all of you to answer it. You know, is having a really collaborative kitchen, a really supportive... And Alyssa, you touched on this. Chloe, you've talked about this. Is that very different from, you know, 99% of other restaurants out there, or is it changing?
I've been to other kitchens where you have no say whatsoever, and you can see that the staff sticks around maybe for a short period of time until they feel like they've learned everything, and then they leave. And building a great environment where you can learn and progress and become better, you have to tap into all the resources you have. And if you don't feel like you're part of it, you're going to take what you can get and get out
and
of there.
Right.
And for me, that's not building a great kitchen.
Do your people stay?
I have a good amount of people who stay. A couple have been with me for four or five years. And the new ones, they're still there, so I'm
right,
hoping they'll stick
around.
No, but
4 or 5 years in the restaurant industry, I feel like that's a really, especially because you've been there 6, you said, right?
Yes.
As a chef. So that's a long time. Okay, Adrian, all the way back to you. So let's talk about your management style in the kitchen. What kind of atmosphere are you trying to create? And how does it differ from other places you've worked in the past?
Well, it differs from like a fine dining environment. When I was at La Bernardin, the cooks there had a different attitude. They expected to be a little harsher. They expected me to be a little harsher with them. They were okay with that. It motivated them, and they responded well to it. That doesn't work for everybody. So I was also not the head boss at that time. So I've learned recently that I can't manage everybody the same. If I yell at this guy, he shuts down. If I yell at this guy, he just starts tail spinning during service, and I can't get a plate out of him. If I yell at this guy, or encourage him a little bit more, prioritize what he's working, then he's a little more focused.
Are you a yeller? You don't sound like a yeller.
Not really. If I'm yelling, that means something's going really wrong. I try to, and also we have an open kitchen, so yelling is not really an option.
That does not stop many chefs, I have to say.
No, it doesn't. And sometimes customers are like, are you okay? When they're looking at me, I'm like, yeah. Give me a second. But I do try to manage most of the cooks differently. I try to find what they respond to. And I kind of take a disappointed mom approach. I'm like, really? You would give me this? You did it perfectly on the last time, and now you're going to bring this to the window? Come on.
How's that working?
It works pretty well most of the time.
And I'm just curious, what percentage of your kitchen is women versus men?
Out of 42 cooks and prep cooks, I have 4 women.
Okay. So still, but, and do you feel like...
And our pastry chef, so 5.
And your pastry chef. And do you feel, do you get more applicants from women, or is it still, because, I mean, I'm just curious if women run kitchens, if women are seeking out jobs in women-run kitchens are not necessarily, if everybody just wants to work at the hottest, best restaurant, which, of course, would be all of your restaurants anyway, so maybe it's hard to tell. I don't know.
I'm not sure. I mean, I was the chef de cuisine for the past couple of months. I've only become the executive chef within the past month and a half.
Right.
So maybe now that people know, maybe I'll get more female applicants.
Right, right.
But up until now, it's been mostly men.
What about you, Angela? How's your kitchen? What's your management style? How is your kitchen different from where you used to work? And what's your goal in terms of your kitchen?
I think, as far as answering the question about women and men, like how many employees we have, it was about equal. Just recently, it's less equal. There's less women in my kitchen.
Yeah.
But as far as my management style goes, I feel like, you know, I've been in restaurants too where yelling is a big part of it, but I think I use a lot of I'm more disappointed, and I do yell a little bit, but I think that, you know, sort of like talking them through it and tapping in, yes, with their emotional side is something that's really easy for me, just because I really manage specifically like looking at people's different personalities. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty, just in terms of my personality, I'm pretty good at being diplomatic that way, so that seems to work for me. But I think that something that's really important for me is bringing awareness to a lot of my staff members about just what it's like to maybe work for a woman chef, or what it was like for me to work for a woman chef. I mentioned Jean Adamson at Vinegar Hill House, and she taught me a long time ago when I was running her line at Vinegar Hill that I remember when I was working right next to her, I was lucky enough to work with her side by side in the first year of Vinegar Hill. And often if diners didn't know who was running that kitchen, they would walk by our small open kitchen and automatically think the male cook that was on the line. And I think that that would happen sometimes. We're in a closed kitchen at Mission Chinese, the newer location, and often cooks that were really, or it seemed like they were cooks because they would know to come down and send us treats, or just fans of the food, they would come down, maybe send us some Gatorades, and then just look around for a male chef and say, thanks, chef, for the meal. And they know about that. They've seen that because I've had dialogue with them about it in between, during service, that, like, that's what happens, and we need to be, like, you need to know that that happens, and I'm okay with that, but you need to know that, that's something that happens all the time. So I think that us having visibility is really important, and also just teaching our cooks that that's something that's not okay, and having banter that is discouraging of that kind of work environment is not okay. And I enjoy talking about that kind of thing with them, and I think they find that fascinating to have somebody that's okay to talk about that and say that that's not okay.
Right.
And you know, it's since Jean told me that, it's something that I've been aware of and something that I'm not angry about. It's just, it makes me want to work harder to be more visible. Something that's happened to me in the past, I travel a lot for work, and I travel with Danny often. And, you know, if we go to a town that maybe doesn't know Mission Chinese food or know that I'm the chef at the New York location, they automatically assume that I'm his wife. And, you know, that's weird, but I know that's a thing that happens. And I think that for us as, like, women leaders, it's important to be out there more and talk about it more and be okay with that, just to move past that, because I think having more visibility versus just, like, sort of not talking about it is super important.
Yeah, visibility. I think I'm going to come back to that for all of you, because, you know, how do you make yourself more visible? How important is PR? Those are really good questions. But I want to just finish talking about management style. Also, I just want to say that I hope this is, when I was about 12 years ago, I worked on a project with David Boulay, and we went to Austria, and I was writing a cookbook, and every single person thought I was his assistant.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was like, you know, so listening to you, I'm like, well, you know, has it changed? Has it not changed? But, you know, breaking through that would be so wonderful. Alyssa, let's talk about your management style in the kitchen and, you know, how you do it differently from where you came from.
Yeah, I think like everyone else, I've had a mixture of working for, you know, the quintessential angry chef who's just screaming all the time, and then also working for people that were really nurturing. And I just personally think you catch more flies with honey. You know, it's like, and it doesn't do any good to be screaming your head off all the time. Not to say that I haven't had my moments, which I'm sure we all have. But, you know, I think over the past few years, in the beginning when we opened the business, I was a lot more stressed out and a lot more prone to kind of agitation and anger, but, you know, I quickly realized that it doesn't work, and I'd much rather lead by example and, you know, just be a consistent, straightforward boss who, you know, I would never ask a staff member to do something that I wasn't willing to do myself, and I think that's really important, and I'm very present. I'm there all the time. I have a very good dialogue with my staff. You know, I think it's also really important, like what was being said earlier about everyone having a say and sort of a, you know, if they have an idea to put on the table, I love that. I love having that dialogue with the rest of my cooks and sort of working together as a team, I think is really important to promote that sense of like team.
Have you had any really great ideas come from your team where you're like, oh my God, thank God I asked for the input?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, I have a guy who's now I'm on maternity leave. He's actually running the kitchen. But before he was doing that, you know, he sort of, we were doing something together. I think we were cleaning up the dry storage room. And he was like, you know, you always have me cleaning the dry storage. You don't listen to any of my, like, I have all these ideas. I was like, great, tell me your ideas. And, you know, he started working on new menu items. And now he's regularly creating new dishes for the menu. And, it, you know, it's a great relationship. And I totally trust him. And, you know, so it's, yeah, absolutely.
And what about you, Chloe? Now, I know that, so when did your restaurant open? It's like a year, right? Or
almost. About 8 months, yeah.
So are you? Do you feel secure in your restaurant management style, or do you feel like you're learning as you're going?
Yeah, it's definitely evolving. I imagine being in a new business, management would change a lot as people get comfortable and used to it. But at By Chloe, we have like a very collaborative environment. It just works the best. Same with Alyssa. I've very recently started discovering certain chefs, you know, have these great ideas to create. And so if the team wants to create too, it just makes for a more well-rounded, diverse menu, especially as a vegan restaurant, having chefs that come from not a vegan background at all, you know, steak, burger, seafood, whatever, having them be like, oh, I just thought of this idea for a vegan recipe, they just come with such a different perspective than I would, and it's really fun to work together.
Any dishes that have come from the non-vegan parts of your staff that's been just like a great keeper that you can think of?
Well, it's fun for me to, because like my background's in cookbooks, I love like teaching people about vegan cooking and techniques and stuff. So yeah, like showing them like this is how you make a cashew cream and then seeing the light bulb go off and being like, oh, or we could add chipotle to it. It's like such a fun process, like showing them how basically anything can be made vegan. So at one point, you know, we had a lot of cooks our first day that didn't know what the word vegan meant. So they didn't
and
even
And you hired
know.
Them anyway?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, you know, there's not that many vegan chefs in New York City, we needed to staff up. So, so we had to take a lot of people and teach them from the beginning, but that's been even more fun.
And Emma, we started with you on this question. So, anything you want to add after listening to everybody else? I know you were talking about how your kitchen is very collaborative because of your experience. Is there?
I think
we've covered it, right?
Yeah.
Okay, let's talk about visibility, because I think that's really, Angela just brought that up, and I think that's really important, you know, getting out there and being seen. And I know a lot of chefs have a kind of love-hate relationship with the press, with PR, with social media, with all of those other things that you have to do that you know, are outside of the kitchen. How are you navigating all of it?
I mean, I'm still like, I think I went to the bathroom like 3 times before coming on stage, because I'm like, it started almost a year ago, and I'm nervous to, I'm really always very nervous to speak in front of people, especially a big, powerful group like this. But you learn and you start to navigate and you start to realize that you want to share as much as possible, but when it comes to media and being around, I'm a shy person. Mm-hmm. If I can hide in the kitchen, great. That's the best. But they keep pushing me out there, and it's. I mean, it's hard, especially for a woman. I've been doing a lot of events where, if there's not a giant picture of me above the stand, they might go up and say hi to my male cook who stands next to me. And sometimes they do have to point out, like, no, I'm not the chef. She is.
Yeah.
And they go like, oh, really? I was like, what do you mean, really?
And does he look like an Emma? He doesn't look like an Emma.
But it's getting easier, and I'm trying to put myself out there more. I really want to encourage women coming up in the industry that it's possible. And a part of me is pushing for more media attention to show that there are women out there. Growing up, I had one female chef in Sweden to look up to. That was it. That was the entire country. And I think maybe we have 5 today. Right. So it's so slow, and I think we need to, when we are in this position,
push ourselves even more so we can speed the process up and make it happen faster.
And what about things like social media and parading, just walking around the dining room, you know, things like that you have to do that hate it, love it, how do you handle it? Twitter, Snapchat?
I'm still learning Instagram. Like,
that's good.
I was just talking with, I have one of my line cooks with me here today. I was like, what's the difference between like a hashtag and a at sign? And I just, I'm trying. But walking around in the dining room, talking to people, I need a kick to get out there, but once I am, it's so rewarding. It's so much fun, and just like I almost broke down to tears another night where I had a man celebrating his 80th birthday, and he just flew out of his seat and gave me the biggest hug ever and said I made the best day of his life, and it was just...
Yay.
Moments like that.
So who's there to give you the kick? Who gives you the, or do you have to, is it self-propelled? Do you have to say, all right, here I go, got to do it? Or is there someone on your team who can be like, okay, you know, time to...
Oh, they all push me out.
They all push you out. Okay, yeah. So you have somebody...
They take turns. Go out.
Go out there. Now let's just go backward down the road. So Chloe, what about you? I mean, how important is visibility, getting the word out, press, social media, all of that?
Yeah, it's definitely tough. I'm sure, as all of us know, just wearing so many different hats. I remember when I actually went to do the Cherry Bomb radio interview, we were about to go on air, and my publicist was like hitting me because I still had my hairnet on because I just come straight from the kitchen. So it's certainly tough to go from working in a kitchen, which is like your most, you know, scrubbed out attire, to actually talking to a human, you know, about your restaurant. But yeah, it's been so important for us, and I think that's the part that I think makes it so much fun. I remember when I worked in other kitchens before, we'd get a ticket through that says, like, you know, nut allergy, berry allergy, but it's like their birthday, make a special dessert or something. We'd be like, okay, let's work so hard. How can we do this? What can we write with the sauce? Send something out that's amazing. And then I would ask the chefs, I'd be like, well, like, what did their face look like? You know, what did they say? How was it? And they're like, well, I don't know. We just send it out. And I'm like, what? I want to go out and walk around and talk to people. So I think that's just really fun of kind of, you know, doing your own thing and having, you know, a place where you have the ability to really interact with customers. And then, of course, Instagram is great. We have so many people that come to buy Chloe, and I'm like, oh, how'd you hear about us? And they're like, oh, Instagram. And we're like, that just wouldn't have happened. I mean, even a couple years ago, it seems like that wouldn't have happened. And now that's where I find all of my restaurants that I want to go to in New York City, too. So it's fun.
And Alyssa, what about you? Love it? Hate it? How do you feel about getting out there?
I'm definitely way more comfortable in the kitchen or in the basement.
But I'm sometimes very, the same place.
Right? Yeah, but I'm lucky because I have a business partner who's amazing at it, and she's always in the dining room. She knows everybody by first name. She's incredible at it, and she also does our Instagram, which is a huge, huge thing for us. It's a great way to get out there. But I do think it's really important to be visible, and I'm constantly working at just trying to get better at it. But unfortunately, because she's so good at it, it's makes it a little easier to kind of stay in the shadows. But
what about those events, you know, those walk-around charity events where you have to, are those the kind of a way that you really, you need to be there because you're cooking and, you know, you need to be the, or can you still hide behind her a little bit?
If I'm out there and I'm cooking and sort of, I don't know, that makes me feel a little more comfortable. It's like,
right.
It sort of gives you this, like,
yeah.
Canopy.
Right, like, this is the thing that I'm doing,
yeah.
That I'm really good at, and...
Yeah.
Angela, have you been, I mean, has it changed for you, you know, just now, you know, working, I guess, rising in the ranks at Mission Chinese and then getting a lot of media attention? Has your relationship to that changed? Are you more comfortable with it these days?
Yeah,
now that you're everywhere?
Yeah, I definitely feel a little bit more comfortable with it. I think that early on when I was getting some attention from the media, I was a little bit more fiery about it. I felt that very early on, the sense of responsibility, now that more there's a platform for me and people are waiting to hear what I have to say about certain things, that I have to be really selective about that, but in a really positive way. Around the time that last year's Pellegrino's World's 50 Best came out. I remember I was especially sensitive when that came out because there was a category for Best Female Chef, which I thought was a little strange.
They still have it.
You know, people sort of write it off as, oh, it's an old frat, but it's okay for me to not be okay about that. And I think during that week, I spent a successive, like, 4 hours speaking with a food writer about just a profile piece on me. Uh-huh. And I remember I was really pissed off because so after the 4 hours, there was a fact checking, and he asked me about my height, which I thought, he wanted to know my specific height, which I refused to answer because I feel like, you know, I think a lot of it was because I'm a woman. He's asking about my body, and I think he was going to bring it up in a positive way that I have a big personality for being a small person, but I think it's important to be selective in what you choose to speak about or not. I just refused to answer the question respectfully, but you know, because they wouldn't, I don't think that it would be common for a person to ask a male chef about their height and include that in a piece about them. So I think being really selective about what it is that you choose to talk about or not is really important. Mm-hmm. And you know, using that opportunity to really speak your mind about what it is that you want people to know about you or your brand. And I think that through, you know, the practicing having interviews with more and more people, I think that something that's really helped me along the way is mentorship and being a part of the community. That's really confidence building for me. I think that I'm lucky enough to have a really great community in the Lower East Side of friends that we can talk about our experiences working with, you know, any kind of like catering geek that's around or a food writer, and we can all kind of share about that. But also mentorship, I think, is really important. I feel lucky that you kind of choose each other in mentorship.
Yeah.
And you might not know it's happening at the time, but it sort of develops into that. And I always felt that me and Jean Adamson, I was lucky enough to have her because I could see her as, you know, she's about 12 years my senior. I see her as when I was a young cook, that it was very possible to be an entrepreneur and be very successful and be in the limelight and be a really badass cook. But also that's something that you also would hope to share with somebody else. And I feel very fortunate and have like this own mini milestone for myself because I have a cook that worked for me that just recently told me that I was her mentor, and I'm like super excited about that and take it really I'm gonna take that really, take it really like.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, like I'm super, super excited about that and I wanna be there for her. So I feel like that's part of the community building and confidence building that we can all be a part of.
And I just think back to, you know, Kat's point. I mean, the more community we have, the more mentors we have, the safer the more collaborative and kind of kinder places that our kitchens can be. The male or female doesn't matter. You know, it's a safe place for everybody to feel like they're part of it. And I think that makes it better for, you know, everybody. On that, you know, Pollyanna note, let's go back to PR. So, Adrian. Love it? Hate it? Do you have to do it?
I have a hard time with it. I'm kind of predisposed to being socially awkward and introverted. So I do feel like it's kind of gratuitous self-promotion in a way, but nowadays it is part of the job. It's pretty necessary. There's so many other chefs and so many wonderful things going on that I look at social media to see what other people are up to so I can get inspiration and ideas, but I'm the last one to put my own out there sometimes. So I've gotten a lot of swift kicks in the butt from bosses, coworkers. My boyfriend recently was like, why don't you do this? Why don't you do that? Like, you know, you're looking at other people's ideas and other people's dishes. Where are yours? Why aren't you putting yours out there more? And it was great that he pointed out to me what really, like, flicked the switch was when he said, if you were coming up and you didn't see anyone like you, why wouldn't you put yourself out there for someone like you to see now?
Such a good point. And I think also, you know, another great thing about, especially about social media, when you can control it, like when you have your own Twitter account or you have your own Instagram account, is it can be another place to put your creative, you know, for people to know what you're doing in the kitchen. I mean, because you're working in the kitchen and yes, you have people seeing, you have your customers who are interacting with the food you're making, but you can kind of you can inspire people like, hey, you know, I'm making this thing and I want to see it too. I want to see what you guys are doing in the kitchen because I can't necessarily get to all your restaurants all the time. So I encourage you to keep Keep doing it. All right, I'm going to let you guys ask just how should we do this? Let me think for a second. Oh, I'm gonna, is this putting you on the spot too much? I see, Emma, you look like you're freaking out. Should I not? All right, if you have a question, okay, we'll do it. It'll be totally voluntary. If you have a question that you all want to follow up, and if you don't, I have more questions, so no pressure. But does anyone, do you want to ask each other any questions about what you've been talking about, things that I haven't gotten to or didn't think of? All right, Chloe, thank
you. Okay. Alyssa, how is it like having a baby and also being a chef? It's something I've thought about, and it seems daunting.
It's extremely new. He's only 4 weeks old, so I still have to learn. Thanks. But I have high hopes for being able to do it all. So we'll see. But I'm still on maternity leave. But yeah, I have a great husband who's helping me with him, and we'll get childcare and just do it. I mean, like everything else, I think you just figure out a way to make it work. You know, just like with starting a restaurant, it's like it seems so crazy in the beginning, but you just piece by piece, you kind of figure it out. So,
is he here?
He is here.
I saw a teeny somewhere. Little baby go by.
I think he was in the back before, but he may have moved. He's out there, someone say.
Aww. Anybody else want to ask any other?
I'd like to ask Emma about, there are very few women with Michelin stars. How has that kind of changed you and your perception on food?
Thank you. I always think that I went into this business to cook, and I love food and everything I can do with it. As some of you might know, running the kitchen wasn't my idea. It wasn't something that I was setting out to do. So doing that, my whole goal was just to be good enough to keep the one star we already had. And don't get me wrong, I'm super excited and I'm very, very proud of everything that happened and two stars, but it's never been anything that I define my career with. I never started cooking saying, hey, I'm going to be the best chef in the world and have 3 Michelin stars. For me, it's always been to do what I love to do, and when amazing things comes with it, that just makes me like bubbly and happy inside that people appreciate what I do. And
does it feel kind of like the same when a guest, like the 80-year-old man, is like, this is the best day of my life?
Yeah, that's why I do this. And that's why I love doing it. Getting recognitions in media, reviews, getting 2 stars, it's more than I could ever dream of. It's absolutely fantastic and amazing. But I think you can never forget why you do it, or it will bury you. Especially with reviews nowadays, that also goes back to social media. Like, I'm sure a lot of you who run kitchens or who owns kitchen, you go online and you read reviews where you go like, it really hurts sometimes when you get the bad ones, but you still got to take them because you still want to read the good ones. So you're in some kind of dilemma where you can't just pick and choose what you want, but that's also very dangerous with social media, that I don't think everyone realizes how much it hurts as much as how happy you get with the good ones. So, but
that's a good point. Any others? Otherwise, I want to ask you guys one final question. Oh, we're not supposed to take it from the audience, but Mimi, come up and ask your question with a microphone. No. Wait, we're getting you a microphone, Mimi. Hang on, we want to hear what you have to say.
Since you're the executive chef in a restaurant with a very famous chef owner, How much input does Marcus Samuelson have on what you do in the kitchen?
He actually has a lot, but he's happiest when I kind of kick his to the side and do what I want to do. He's like, I want to do this. I'm like, yeah, I'll give that a shot, but I want to do this. So how do you like it, Chef? Let's give it a try. And I also think... but he's also really great about, you know, just respecting the work ethic. I think death and kitchens are the great equalizers. If you can't do the job, you can't do the job. So I think he respects the work ethic, and if I bring my ideas to him or just change his ideas and do whatever I want anyway, he's like, all right, you know, you're doing it. You're on it. I respect it. Go for it.
Thank you. That's a great question. All right, one last thing. Since you guys are the new wave, you are what is up and coming. I want to know, what is the thing that you are most excited about right now in the kitchen? The thing you're doing, the thing you're seeing, the thing that you're thinking about but maybe haven't even tried? Just like, what's the thing that is giving you goosebumps? Emma, why don't we start with you? It could be a food, it could be an ingredient, it could be anything.
You have spring just around the corner. Like, it's one of my favorite seasons. You're coming out of this boring, dull root, no offense for vegan, but root vegetable season. And you get the baby animals. Okay. That's what I'm excited about.
Chloe.
Okay, sure.
On to you.
I think I'm most excited about the rise of the breakfast sandwich. It's so simple and everyone's so excited about it. It's something vegans have been left out from for so long.
Oh, so
true.
Bacon,
egg, cheese, sausage, can't have any of it. So I'm working on something of that nature and I'm really excited.
Very exciting. Alyssa?
Yeah, I was actually going to say the seasonal thing as well. I mean, I think summer is just so exciting for, you know, produce and fruits and, I mean, just tomatoes. It's like the simplest thing in the world, but when you get a perfect one, it's absolutely incredible. And so I think this is my favorite time of year when everything just seems like it's coming alive again. You know, it's like you're coming out of a winter when everything's a bit like, you know, it's great, but it's sort of a long stretch. And I think now just everything is so fresh and bright and beautiful that it doesn't need a lot of, like, additions. So that's always really exciting.
Oh, it does feel like tomatoes are so far away, but yeah. But they're coming. Angela, what are you excited about?
I think that a trend that I see and I'm definitely a part of is I think people are going to get really excited about tea. People are very excited about craft coffees. I'm a big tea nerd at the moment. We have a really cool tea that comes from a specific region in Japan called Fukuoka, and the teas there are very umami and very different than other green teas, and I think that people want to know more about tea. It's a different type of caffeine. It's a whole different flavor profile. There's different ways to brew it and roast it, and I think that we're going to see a lot of that after this rise of matcha that we've seen that's very Instagrammable and in everything. So people are going to kind of divert away from that and into different types of oolong teas and other types of green leaf teas.
And are you working with that right now? Is that something that you're doing a tea program?
I think about it a lot, and I like think about when I'm going to have my next cup, and
which is going to be exactly in 2 minutes.
So I think that everyone's going to get really excited about tea and want to know more about different types of varietals.
And what about you, Adrian?
I'm really excited about. I've been raised in like French kitchens, more or less, so I've always known European and some Asian cultures as well, but I've recently, working in Harlem and living there as well, been discovering the cuisines of different countries in Africa, because they are just as deep and there's so many different ingredients and they vary by region and tribe and country, and I don't think I've ever really discovered them, even Caribbean culture. So I'm learning a whole new flavor profile and way of cooking, and I'm so excited about bringing those things into our dishes.
Oh, that's great. So we're going to be able to see that on the menu in the spring?
Yes, with some nice spring leafy greens.
Exactly. And breakfast sandwiches, maybe, and tea. All right, everybody, thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Boys and girls are on fire.
you to Melissa, Adrian, Chloe, Alyssa, Emma, and Angela. Be sure to check out Melissa's column in the New York Times, and if you live in New York or are visiting the city, go have a meal at By Chloe, Red Rooster Harlem, Aquavit, Dimes, and Mission Chinese Food. The best way to support women in this industry is to support their businesses, no matter where you live. If you'd like to be the first to know about this year's Jubilee in New York and our upcoming San Francisco Jubilee, sign up for our mailing list at cherrybomb.com. Thanks to our engineer, Dave Tadashore, and thanks again to our sponsors for supporting this season of Radio Cherry Bomb. Natural Gourmet Institute for Health and Culinary Arts. Start your journey to becoming a natural food chef today by visiting ngihca.edu. Prince Street, a fresh podcast with a culinary heart. For more, visit livefromprincestreet.com, or you can download the Prince Street podcast from iTunes. Baldor Specialty Foods curates and delivers the best and freshest food in the world to the restaurant and hospitality industries. Learn what Baldor can do for your business today at baldorfood.com. Thanks for listening, everyone. I'm Carrie Diamond, and you're the bomb.
Hi, I'm Marie Petula, and I'm the owner of Union Restaurant in Pasadena and Need & Company in downtown Los Angeles. Radio Cherry Bomb is a joint production of Cherry Bomb Magazine and the Heritage Radio Network. To subscribe or learn more about the magazine, visit cherrybomb.com. You know who I think is the bomb? Natasha Case, co-founder of Cool House. She is an innovative and inspiring woman and a leader in the food industry.